The spirit of performance is what defines Acura. And now, it's electric. Introducing the ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
Welcome back to the Schmozone podcast, episode number 106. I'm Dave Schmolenson, a.k.a. The Schmo. My co-host is...
Helen Yee with Helen Yee Sports.
And today we have a treat for you all. We have Roxanne Modafferi, the happy warrior, the pioneer in female mixed martial arts, and UFC lightweight, the monkey king, Jordan Leavitt.
What a great introduction. Thank you.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. Having that little moniker before my name, like the monk, the UFC fighter, Jordan Leavitt, that's still takes getting used to. I'm not used to that yet. It's weird.
Well, it's funny because if anyone was just walking down the streets and they just look at you two, they would never know that you're trained killers inside of a cage. And you're just great people to be around, great positive vibes. And we definitely have a treat today because both of you are on together.
Yeah, I'm excited. You know, yeah, we're pretty unassuming people. You know, we're on the east side at the studio. We walk out, something bad happens, be a rough night for them. You know, not getting this wallet. So.
And also, I have to add, you and I went to the same high school, Sierra Vista High School.
Yeah, go Mountain Lions, man.
Have you been back since? I mean, I doubt it, but.
So I actually used to coach there for 2 years after I graduated. And my sister graduated, I think, 2 years ago. So. It's just now finally getting to the point where I don't know anybody there. I just know a few of the seniors, and officially high school stage of my life will be over, and I'll be 28. So that's kind of cool.
Yay, congrats.
Thank you. So for everyone just wondering, why the hell do we have both of you on together? You two have a great relationship. You're both friends, training partners. How did the relationship materialize? Because you two are pretty close. We hear talking about wedding plans. Jordan being involved with the lightsaber duel before we started recording. How did this relationship begin? Friendship relationship, I might add, for everyone who's poor listeners.
So I was 18 when I went to Syndicate. So I graduated high school. I wrestled a little bit. And I was working for like 5 months, but I was super bored. Like, I'm not good at the whole 9-to-5 thing. I was going to school. So I started going into MMA to kind of find a competitive, like, athletic outlet. And the first person to, like, say hi to me, my Syndicate, was Roxanne. And it's not like it was, like, her home yet. Like, she had just gotten there, like, a few months prior, like, off her first stint on The Ultimate Fighter. And she's like, hey, I'm Roxanne. And I'm like, I know. And then I was, like, super embarrassed that I said I know. So I didn't talk for, like, a few more months. But, yeah, and then fast forward 9 years later, here we are. Yeah.
Yeah, you were always cool to me. You know, I always looked for training partners, especially guys who wouldn't, like, go too hard or who would be a good training partner. So you were one of those guys. You always trained with me, trained really well with me. I got good work. You were really cool. We were both kind of oddballs. It was awesome. Oh. And, yeah, especially in lots of my fight camps, especially in my last fight camp, you helped me out so much in preparing. So I'm very grateful. Like, you have such good control. Like, I'm sure you can control exactly how much pressure to the ounce goes into your strikes. And especially, like, near the end of my career, I was having issues with getting headaches after training. So I was trying to have a fight camp without getting, like, minor concussion symptoms. And I was able to take my headgear off and grapple with you. And so it was super awesome.
Hmm. Nice to hear. You know, I've looked up to Roxy for almost a decade. You know, I used to watch her on the TV. I knew her before we even met. It's really cool. It's like bridging the whole divide between seeing someone as, like someone you see on the TV, like this abstract individual, then seeing them as a person and kind of seeing that develop into a friendship. It's really cool. I'm very lucky.
Yeah, because we ran into Roxanne at UFC X this past weekend, and we were like, yeah, we need to get you and Jordan on the podcast, and she was just so excited. So it's so cool to see, like you said, like, in the friendship and continue to grow, and hopefully you RSVP to her wedding, right?
I'm going to.
Putting you on the spot.
I'm just so bad at that, those type of things. Like
whatever the internet, right?
I'm not an internet person at all. Like, except for my memes and like a few like selfies on Instagram, I'm pretty bad at the whole internet thing.
Wait, but even leading up to this Patty fight, which I know like so many more, you know, eyeballs and media and all these obligations for you. So, I mean, you have to spend a little more time now on the internet, right?
Yeah, I do. I'm not sure how I feel about it. So, surprisingly, at least to me, a lot way more positive than negative. That's the first time. It's usually mostly negative. No one likes the whole twerking split gimmick. So it's kind of cool with finding someone who's liked less than me, or at least rubs people the wrong way more than me. So it's kind of cool to be the good guy for the first time. So I'm kind of enjoying it, but trying not to stay too much on social media.
But how did the twerking stuff like start? Did you always think like, you know, when I beat someone, I'm just going to twerk?
Oh, it's kind of just a joke. So like a lot of my teammates or like my coach, like John Wood, will be like, oh, wouldn't it be funny if someone did this? And I'm like, I like archive it in the back of my head. I'm like, I'll do that. Like the Dirty Dancing lift thing was a complete joke. Like we were joking about it like for my debut like 3 months prior. There's a video of me like getting picked up by my teammate Sherrard. And they're like, wouldn't that be funny if you did that after your fight? And I'm like, yeah, it would be funny. So then like we're backstage, we're hitting mitts, and I have a nice sweat going. I'm like, let's practice the lift a few times. Like nice. I had a cornerman like Chris Ruffin, big guy. He's like, yeah, let's do it. And I almost got injured. Dude, I almost didn't make it to that fight. I got basically like thrown into the TV in the corner of the warm-up room. But then after that, we got it down. We nailed it for after the win. So yeah, nice. Everything starts off as a joke.
Gosh, good thing you practiced that.
Go throw me out of the cage.
So is there anything else archived right now that maybe the audience will be surprised for Patty? Because I know you told the schmo you'll be twerking, but unless there's something else up the sleeve.
Oh, no. Like nothing I could say yet. There's a lot of things, a lot of them inappropriate. I just want to say the buildup for this fight's been very like homoerotic. Like everyone wants me to do some pretty sus things. You should kiss him after you beat him. I'm like, I'm not going to do that. You know, you could twerk on his face, do this, do that. I'm like, I'm going to see how I'm feeling, you know. See what ideas you get when you're cutting weight. They're not usually the most lucid ideas, but we'll see what I'm thinking weight cut week.
I still can't believe in the moment during the interview a few months ago that twerking all over Patty's body, laying on the canvas, that went over my head. But in a sport that gratifies machismo, bravado, and just like masculinity, like rah, 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 what I appreciate about you two is you're always true to yourself. You're true to your personalities and your character, and that's what shines. And I think if it's not happening already, it's already happened a lot through your career, especially towards the tail end as the sport has grown. People start appreciating you for who you are. And I think, Jordan, we're going to start to see that for you, especially in front of the UK crowd.
I'm hoping eventually they'll like me for me. You know, like I had Roxy as an example for that. Wasn't trying to play a character. A lot of fighters, like, you see them on the TV and you're like, I don't like that person at all. Then you meet them in person and they're really great individuals. They're afraid of showing that because it's like, oh, it's not the most marketable side of me. But I feel like if you're trying to live up to like this character, you're never going to be authentic. And I think a lot of people like recognize that subconsciously. So like Roxy being herself, me being able to look up to that, I was like, maybe I don't have to like be macho, tough guy. And I can just be me. And yeah, it's worked for her. I think it's going to work for me. So
I know for Roxy, like I've seen you dress up as Mortal Kombat characters. Katana. I love that outfit.
Thank you.
So how important was it for you to, like David said, like remain true to yourself, especially as things continue to evolve in the sport and with social media and just, you know, at the core of it all, just be true to you?
Well, I was raised that way by my mom because I got teased a lot when I was a kid for just being eccentric. And my mom said, like, no, it's awesome about you. You know, you should be yourself always. So I always kind of felt that way inside. And then when I first started coming up, the girls all like did nude poses and little boxing gloves in front of their boobs. And like sexuality was how they marketed themselves. And I never wanted to. So the only ways to market yourself was to either take your clothes off or like just knock everybody out. You know, it's similar today as well, but there's more details, I think, more choices. But I was like, man, what am I going to do to be special? So I decided to go with what I love and like really blow it up. Like, I like, you know, these characters. I'm going to freaking go all out and cosplay you know, and also I know the Japanese fighters liked to do walkouts that were very unique, but I was too nervous on fight day. So doing weigh-in stuff was my way to like do that, but not be too nervous for the fight. So I remember you said you practiced the lift. I practiced those fans. I went and I like watched YouTube Chinese fan dances and I like practiced like flicking them out there and it worked out.
That's awesome. And I remember when we've done interviews in the past and you told me like the, is it called the wig?
The Saiyan hair.
Yeah. And you would level up. Yes. And they would be different colors, yep. Right? That was cool.
I'm having my temporary state of Saiyan hair right now with going blonde for okay. A one-time ordeal shindig. I had a whole thing planned because I knew Charles Oliveira was in town for UFC X, so I had to pay prospects to the champion. I put in quotation marks because there's no champion technically due to rules in your division.
Jordan rolls his eyes.
Oh gosh, I mean it's a 1 pound, but I understand. But DC cheated.
I was gonna say.
And then even for Khabib's last weigh-in, like it was not even a full second, like 155, and they kind of kicked everybody off the scale. So I don't know. It seems a bit unfair considering they haven't set like a. It's they've been kind of muddy with how they've been doing it, like historically. I just think if he was an English speaking champ, that was more popular here, I don't think it would have even been an issue. Mm-hmm. I think they would have brought the towel a little closer. They could have figured it out.
DC admitting that in his Hall of Fame speech, holding the towel. And then you get Charles Oliveira, less than a pound difference, and he had a different weight on a different scale,
yeah, on
I
the
guess.
Test scale. They have the hotel, which is supposed to be calibrated, and then people are like, well, you have an hour. Well, you don't really have an hour, because you make weight, you have to get to the car, you have to travel to the place, you have to sweat, you have to make it back. So really, you have like 20 minutes, and after you're already like 20 pounds dehydrated for a lot of like these male fighters, like you're not going to get a sweat in that quickly.
Yeah, we have to be confident that test scale is accurate. Like, I bring my own scale to cut weight with. So when I first arrive at the location, I bring my scale, put it next to the test scale, and I write down the difference so that when I'm in the bathtub and I get out, I can, you know, be confident that, okay, that's the proper weight. So, like, I never thought, gosh, what would happen if it's not the proper weight? Like, I would be screwed, right, if I were close. Mm-hmm. You know, I do believe in making sure that you're ahead enough of the game to be able to make weight, even if you have a bad weight cut. Like, you know, don't be fat, but
well, what about,
but still, it's, you know, a big deal.
Yeah, I mean, it changes the entire outlook for his fight purse moving forward.
Exactly.
Too.
His life has changed.
Yeah, like, completely. And that's why he's calling out Conor McGregor, because he knows that's where he'd make more money than having a championship fight with like an Islam Makhachev or an Alexander Volkanovski. Like, to make that money back for losing out from not being the defending champion, Conor McGregor makes more sense for him from a financial standpoint.
Circling back to the scales, though, some people have suggested, should there be a digital scale? What do you guys think? Like, do you think they should implement digital scale or just leave it?
The problem with digital scales, like, throughout time, they get less accurate. But I also understand, like, the whole manual scale seems antiquated. But
isn't the medical scale more accurate?
Yeah, supposedly it's more accurate, but
I mean, those can be uncalibrated as well, and then the digital scales can be faulty, so I don't even know, like...
I'm not sure if it would actually change too much, you know? There definitely would be the Khabib, like, 155, like, you couldn't do it, like, it's, like, quickly, like, kind of, you know, manipulate it.
Unless you want to, like, Serena told me that she likes to take, like, a 50-pound dumbbell from the hotel weight room and put it on there, and then she'll test it out. So she'll test the scale with that. So that could be something, like, if you really want to... If the UFC really wanted to make a big deal out of that, they could show, like, okay, here you go, donk, and then the guy gets on, and then the next one, donk, and then the other guy gets on. Like, yeah, I guess you could do that.
Even fighters could challenge the scale. I feel like they should have several scales at the place on standby, and you should be able to argue, like, no, I want to check on this scale, like your backup scale. I don't know.
Maybe.
Yeah, I go back and forth with it. I mean, I understand why they keep it as well. You can put, like, advertisement on there too. I always see the Body Armor logo, so that helps. And from an aesthetic purposes and a traditionalist standpoint, like the optics of having like an official scale like that help out in all senses. But yeah, what you said with digital scales too, over time those can get less accurate. So I go back and forth. I just want consistency, and it's hard to get consistency when you have an athletic commission changing the scale the morning of, or at 6 a.m. they realize it's not the same as what an athlete is testing on, you know, hours beforehand. So the inconsistency is what always gets me. So you're about 2 weeks away from the UK.
Yeah. Yeah.
Pretty exciting stuff.
It is. I mean, I don't get excited for fights. It's not. I'm not like once like another day in the office. Like it's exciting. It's like exhilarating. But for me, it's just a fist fight. I do so many more dangerous, like scary things.
Like what?
Like even just driving here and like my grandpa's old beat up car and like there's no heat. Like I could have died here way easier than I could anything bad could happen to me during the fight.
Why is there no heat in your car or no AC?
Yeah, it's just it's like 89. So it's like 6 years older than me.
You weren't born. Yeah, I was gonna say.
We gotta get Jordan a new car.
I just need that Patty money, okay? I can afford a new car after I win this fight. I won't have such a dangerous day to day life. But yeah, like fight night's not that scary, you know. Like it's just a fight. It's 15 minutes. Like I've been to bad sparring sessions where you're getting beat up for 5 rounds, and then you do heavy bag work, and then you go back later, and you're injured and all this, and there's no adrenaline to dull the pain. So when you fight, yeah. Like I have broken fingers, broken feet, don't feel a dang thing. Split my chin open with a headbutt, don't feel anything. So for me, fighting's just it's a little bit faster, like 5% faster, but it's so much easier than a bad sparring session.
It's true.
One thing that stood out too from going back to our interview a few weeks back, you believe this is going to be an awkward fight. It's going to be a very awkward fight. Explain why you think that for the audience.
So I'm a very strange off-rhythm fighter, and he has a lot, I'm not respectfully saying, has a lot of technical deficiencies. And so like even though we both have holes in our game, I'm not sure if we both have the like ability to capitalize on each other's mistakes in a consistent way. So I think this is going to be a very strange fight. I would love for him to come out there and be like a very normal like Thai fighter. Like he fixes everything, comes out very textbook. But when I watch the film, when I watch my film, I'm like, this fight's is not going to be a banger. Like there's some fights you can look at it like this is going to be exciting, and then there's some fights where I'm like, it's gonna be something.
I think cool stuff's going to happen. I think there's going to be crazy scrambles. Maybe you'll do another choke armbar. What was that? That funny one.
My Kimura choke.
The Kimura choke. Yeah. Like, I think I love that about your fights. Like, it's crazy stuff always happens. I don't know whose arm is where, what position you guys are in, like, what's going to happen, and then blah, 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 blah. With punches and kicks.
At least I know one person will be excited.
I'm super excited. Maybe I'm more excited
people.
Than you.
Three
yeah,
people
we're
here.
We're excited.
Yeah. But yeah, I like to prepare for, in my head, like, the crowd's going to hate it, the fans are going to hate it, I'm going to win this fight, my stock's going to go up at all. So yeah, I'm preparing for a boring, ugly, awkward fight, and hopefully something special will happen.
We have any special plans for the walkout?
Oh my gosh, I've been dying to pick out a walkout song that's fun, because I also have to take into so many things into consideration. Like, they're gonna be booing over everything, so it has to be kind of pumping, has to kind of pump me up, but like I also don't like to get pumped up. Like, I don't wanna go out there and have my heart racing, but I also can't mellow myself out. And I'm looking at a lot of like English, like musicians, and I just, none of them are like working for me. So I'm probably going to walk out to something pretty stupid, or at least something that'll get the crowd to like drunkenly sing along with me and distract them from booing. So no plans for the walk up. I'm trying to think of a fun song that'll kind of, if not get the crowd behind me, at least distract them from disliking me and being vocal about it.
I'll send you a couple of ideas after this podcast. I got some fun things in my mind, but we'll save them too. But Roxy, it's been a few months for you. In the retired life. Can we call it retired life, too? Because you're still coaching.
Job transition.
Nice.
Yeah.
How's life?
It's very interesting. Not exactly what I had anticipated. I was hoping to, like, jump right into a full-time job, you know, but that hasn't happened yet. But I'm enjoying life very much. I'm enjoying not having the pressure of going into the gym and getting hit in the head every day. I get to go in and do jiu-jitsu almost every day, and I love that. It's my favorite thing. I can teach kids again. I've been hired by Tribe Fitness and Martial Arts, Casey Milliken, my former jiu-jitsu coach. So I've been teaching adults and kids there. I've been training at Jiu-Jitsu Methods with Renee Lopez. Such a good spider guard. Oh, I love spider guard. So I've been working on my spider guard, and I've been writing a lot. my own book and then just MMA articles. If you follow me on social media, you'll see like I've been putting stuff out on the All-Star and Bloody Elbow. Also, I'm trying to finish that book. I kind of been going in spurts. I'm waiting for another chapter or two to be edited by some friends, and then I think I'll be ready.
That's huge.
And preparing for your wedding.
And preparing for my
wedding.
It's
in October.
Yes, I'm marrying Chris Roman, and I love him, and I'm so happy living with him. It's wonderful. I'm kind of, you know how I train really hard. I kind of, as almost a joke, but not really. I'm training to be the best wifey. I want to be the champion wifey of all wifeys. So I've been making hilarious videos on my Instagram about all the things I'm doing to prepare for that. I might be trying too hard, but that's okay. And what was I going to say? Oh, yeah. I'm also looking forward to having my name be easily spelled and pronounced. Roman. So easy.
Modafferi is not that difficult.
Yeah.
You'd be surprised. Nobody says it right. You said it right. Thank you.
How do they say it?
Like Moda Ferrari, Modafferi.
I used to say Modafferi.
I'm getting Yuri Prohaska's name butchered all the time.
Wow.
I'm saying Prozhaka constantly during interviews with him. So I'm feeling bad as the schmo. But Modafferi is a lot easier for me to say than Prohaska.
Not even the hyphen?
I think you said it right.
You don't want to be Modafferi Roman?
I think for fights, I'll be Roxanne Modafferi because I think it's better for the brand to keep it.
Yes.
But then for non-fight things, I'll be Roxanne Roman. And nice. And Chris, my fiancé, says it's a superhero name. And I'm like, what do you mean superhero name? And he said, come on, like double, you know, the alliteration, like RR, like Peter Parker, you know, that it's always like that. So I can be a superhero.
That's awesome. Finally.
Some more jiu-jitsu matches, too. You were talking about rematching Danielle Kelly potentially before?
I have to improve my secret techniques first.
Okay.
But yes, I just finished a jiu-jitsu match on the UFC Fight Pass Invitational. That was awesome. I feel much improved from my previous matches. I'd like more opportunities, hopefully sooner rather than later, because we're thinking about having a little one.
Oh, nice.
So after we get married. So I'm going to try to get as much as I can in before that happens.
I'm so happy for you.
Maybe. We'll see.
Our kids could play.
Yeah.
How old's your baby?
Almost a year and a half.
Oh, wow.
Or hopefully after I win this fight and after I get the new contract and after, hopefully we can start having some more. That'd be nice. But one two-bedroom condo, two dogs, one baby, wife, me. Yeah, I'm going to get some more space, more square footage. Yeah, awesome. Kids can play together.
Be parent friends.
Yeah, be parent friends.
Heck
a little
yeah.
Play dates. That'd be awesome.
And most importantly, after this fight, you need a car with AC.
I do.
That's important here.
I feel all embarrassed. Like, my car breaks down 2 days in a row, and then, like, first day, battery's dead. So then, like, the next day, I replaced the battery. Everything's running smoothly, but then I had to, like, kind of crank it, and then the starter breaks. But luckily, I'm at Sam's Club. So then I asked for the tow truck, and they said they'll be there in an hour. 5.5 hours later, I'm still there, and I'm, like, dying.
No.
So, luckily, Sam's Club is the best place to be stranded ever. I ate an entire bag of nectarines, almost ate an entire bag of pears, so, like, 6 pounds of fruit. It wasn't dehydrated, wasn't starving, just sweating, like, bullets, you know. But, yeah, luckily, you know, I almost bought it, and I was at Sam's Club, and... You know, I'm all tired, like working out hard all day. And I'm like, I saw some bikes. I almost bought like a $600 electric bike. I'm like, oh, maybe I'll just try to get that and I'll ride home and come back before the car gets towed. And my mom heard me. She's like on the phone to me. She's like, okay, use your grandpa's car. So that's why I'm driving the good old, like old reliable without the AC. And
yeah, well,
how many miles?
Well, it's like 190. Oh. My grandpa actually didn't drive too much.
Yeah,
he took
that's
very good care of it.
Not many miles for 89.
Yeah.
Her parents had a 2004 Lexus with way over 300,000 miles on it.
Yeah, wow. They celebrated hitting 300,000. It's still in one piece now.
That's impressive.
That's impressive. Did you say, like, this is the last fight on your contract?
Oh, no. After I win this fight in exciting fashion, I'm going to get a new contract.
Okay.
So I'm manifesting that, but it makes sense. I've won my first fight on the new contract, and after I beat Patty Pimblett, I think I'll have some more negotiating power, hopefully. So,
And for this camp, though, have you still been running barefoot? Like, even though it's so hot out?
Oh, no.
No?
No. It's too hot. This time of year, I don't run barefoot. I'm still running, you know. It's nice to go out and get a nice jog in. But, yeah, maybe if I move to somewhere a little bit cooler, I can run barefoot year-round. But, yeah, I may have a mile and a half in me in July before I'm butchered, so.
But why do you prefer that? The barefoot?
So I think it's mostly just I have more experience with it. So my senior year of high school, I was wrestling, and I was talking to one of my friend's parents, and he runs, like, marathons and ultramarathons and stuff. And he's like, have you ever ran a marathon? I'm like, I'm not much of a runner. I ran 3 years ago for track, and he's like, well, on my training schedule, if you run 11 miles tomorrow, you could be on pace to run the Las Vegas Marathon. So I was like, okay, I'm running 11 miles. I never ran more than, like, 2 miles ever. So, like, I was running, like, 6 miles in, I'm, like, completely trashed. I take off my shoes, I'm giving up. And I'm like, okay, I'll run the last little bit barefoot. And so then I finished my 11-mile, like, jog barefoot, and I was like, cool. And it's cheaper, and you can't run stupid barefoot. Like, you're not going to go faster than you can handle when you're barefoot. And mechanically, it makes you land on the forefoot and not the heel of your foot. So, yeah, I'm just minimalist shoes or barefoot now. Forever, hopefully.
Yeah, I heard that it makes your feet stronger and, like, it's better for you to run barefoot. My trainer Lorenzo said that. I don't do it, but that's what he said, so I understand.
Yeah. Only downside is, like, there's weird bugs and like, cockroaches are not cool to, like, step on at night. You hear, you know, that's disgusting. I'll never get used to that. Lots of bugs, lots of glass.
Yeah, don't you, like, get stuff stuck in your feet, like pinchy or
So surprisingly, so if you run and there's, like, a bunch of glass pieces, like, in one area, it won't, like, puncture your foot because, like, surface area is spread out. But if there's, like, one little piece of glass, it ruins your entire run. So I actually never had a glass issue except for, like, little slight, like, little cuts. Huh. Just losing toenails, like... There's, like, a slight, like, crack in the road. Yeah.
Shoes.
Knock off your toenail. So, yeah, there's a reason humans are civilized and we wear shoes. And, you know, I'm very privileged for choosing to run in a minimalist way.
David's a runner.
Yeah, but when I would do the barefoot running, it'd only be on, like, sand in a beachy area. But, yeah, because I was just always worried about glass on the pavement in random places.
Yeah, life's meant to be lived dangerously, David.
That's true. That's very true. Wanted to ask you just your thoughts about everything going on, and I guess your former Division 125, Jessica I just retired. Tyla Santos pretty much gave Valentina Shevchenko, I think, probably the best fight she's had as a champion. Arguably won that fight in a lot of people's scorecards. Like, what do you make of the new wave of talent coming in to the UFC and kind of a changing of the guard from the older class to the newer class?
Mm-hmm. I do think that the people within, like, 3 years of me, of my debut, which is 2003, they're starting to retire because, you know, we're getting older and et cetera, et cetera. I think that nowadays, not just in my division, but everywhere, people are more like athletes, you know? They aren't just martial artists or someone off the street who want to fight, you know? People are starting young, you know? I teach kids, you know? I actually, it's funny, slightly off topic, but not really. I rolled with Rihanna. She's a blue belt. She's 16. I taught her when she was 5.
Wow.
So now she's probably going to get her purple belt soon. Like, she's been training for like 10 years or something, you know? So, but she started so young. So now we're seeing those people who have started super young and then they get this, you know, almost professional athletic training to reach there, like Macy Barber, you know, she's super young. So yeah, indeed. Now we're seeing younger people with all the wealth of the proper training coming up and doing really well. So I think that's the new wave is, like, athletic. And there's money now. When I started fighting, there wasn't any money, really. So now there's, you know, a new crew of athletes who are very well-rounded in all areas. You don't have just a striker or just a wrestler. You know, I think everyone should have their little strength amongst their skill. But, yeah, I think it's exciting to see. Like, I think we're going to start seeing, like, crazy super athletes now. You know, people who, like him, he can do crazy grappling and, you know, someone who can just do shoot takedown after takedown and not get tired or, I don't know, things like that. And I thought Tyler won.
You thought she won? Mm-hmm. I thought she won in real time as well. Interesting how that was, but it kind of reminded me of the Dominic Reyes John Jones fight, UFC 247, when John Jones ended up winning that fight in the championship rounds because they're scoring the takedowns. And I feel like it was kind of similar with Valentina in the championship rounds, but I thought Tyla at least won three of those five rounds, and it was interesting to see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've been examining the unified rules more, and I've actually interviewed one of the judges, a judge, and he had really good insight. And I'm starting to think that the unified rules are kind of pro striker, because it says that takedowns aren't really counted unless there's damage or an attack and damage mounted off of it. So how people sometimes do the last 10 second takedown, that really doesn't count for anything according to unified rules unless you start hitting them a few times after you take them down. So I was all happy because I took Casey down in the last 10 seconds, but that wouldn't have counted in the unified rules because I didn't hit her afterwards. And I'm thinking it's hard to take somebody down against their will. You know, that should be counted for something, or ground control. You know, I do understand that the fans don't want to see just someone laying and praying, but I feel like there hasn't really been laying and praying for years. I haven't even heard that term lately, you know. So I feel like unified rules are pro striker. You know, fight start on the feet. If you wrestle somebody to the ground using a big effort, that's not even counted unless you hit them, you know. But on the other hand, I know that in a street fight, you know, the person who gets bonked the most will probably lose. So it's kind of hard, but I would like to see a little bit of tweaking done to the unified rules, where a little more credit is given to the grapplers.
Well, I just find it difficult because I feel like it varies state by state, athletic commission. There are some judges, I feel like, that value control time. Some value damage more, significant strikes. I just feel like if I'm a fighter and I'm not accustomed to what judging typically is in that region or that country, that would affect my strategy.
I think you're right.
I think control is damage. So if I'm landing little flicky jabs that do no damage and don't at all rock you, they count that as damage because it's kind of going towards the direction of finishing the fight. But if I hold someone in side control, which is a dangerous position, that's damage. That's nearing a conclusion to the fight. That's nearing a finishing sequence. And I feel like a lot of the times, since it's more easy to watch strikes, he didn't really do damage, but he landed 40 jabs. It's then it wasn't damaging, but it doesn't affect the course of the fight at all. Except it's just frustrating for me because people who grapple understand, that's a dominant position. But then a judge will be I didn't see any damage done. But I bet you the person on bottom felt scared in that position. I felt there was some emotional damage, some mental pressure being put on them. And I feel like that's not accounted for because, damage equals strikes. But
right? You could be squishing them and that's damage, but that's not counted by the judges, right?
I've made plenty of people cry during sparring sessions and they're never could I knock them out. It's because they're getting whooped and they're getting controlled. And that's the most exhausting part of this sport, getting pushed against the cage. The cage hurts, you're exhausted, they're breathing in your ear, the sweat squishing. It's a lot of stuff happening. And a lot of fighters understand how hard that part of the game is, but then judges kind of try to discredit it. So,
yeah, I feel like just from the scoring system, 10-9 can mean so many different things. It can look so many different ways, and it can vary on so many people's scorecards for who that 10-9 is for. But then you go to a 10-8 or even something extreme like a 10-7, you know what that looks like. You know that's a domination, a very one-sided affair. I just think how the rules play out right now with 10-9 and that type of scoring system we've adopted from boxing, as this sport continues to evolve, you're going to get into more and more sticky situations with scoring overall because we're not using a point system that covers all the skill sets on display.
Yeah, and also the 10-9 system, for such a small amount of rounds, is really stupid. So I went around, but then I accidentally hit them in the groin. I get a point taken away. I now am basically fighting for a draw unless I win every round. So that's kind of one way in which the 10-plus scoring system doesn't really make a lot of sense. And also there is no grappling 10-8 rounds. Damian Maia is on your back that entire fight. That's almost finishing the fight for 4+ minutes. That's the same way as we're getting knocked down several times in a fight. Like, you're getting close to finishing the fight, and there's no 10-8 grappling rounds. And I feel like that needs to happen. There's been so many fights. Like, Khabib, I think almost all the rounds he won should have been 10-8 rounds, you know? The fight's very near being concluded.
Did they score one of the Aljamain Sterling-Peter Yan fights in that second fight, the one they just had? Were one of those rounds, like the second or third round, a 10-8 round where he had his back most of the time? Did any of the judges score
one,
that 10-8?
Yeah, one judge gave it a 10-8. But it's also because Aljo was throwing some nice elbows. But he shouldn't have had to throw like those elbows. Like, Peter Yan was almost finished several times. So that's by the criteria, the fight's almost concluded. That should have been a 10-8.
But are you guys fans of open scoring?
Yeah. Heck yeah, 100%.
But then people are worrying about stalling in that type of situation.
I don't think so. Plus, you know, the fighters already have their idea of who's winning, right? This is just confirming it, but they're still going to fight hard. Like, I don't know. That's what I think. Yeah,
this isn't the era of lay and pray where you could lay on someone and exert no pressure and they're just going to say they're like, you can't stall at somebody who's trying to kill you. And if you're stopping them from killing you, you're not stalling by definition. If someone's swinging big bombs at me and I'm like evading them, like you can't stall MMA anymore. Not really. So
that's a good point. By the very definition, if someone knows they're losing, they're gonna friggin' come out hard, and then they can't stall. Like, unless they run away, and then they're gonna penalized.
Yeah, like Peter Yan, the last round of the Aljo fight. If Peter knew, like, hey, I'm behind on the cards, he may have gone out trying to kill Aljo, supposed to be like, well, statistically speaking, I think I have a 50% chance of being ahead right now, so I just got to win this round. And I feel like it makes fights a lot more exciting when you know the fifth round this person's going to come try to kill you.
I like the idea of open scoring for championship fights, for five-round fights, because if somebody's dominating or up on the scorecards for the first three rounds, it's go time if you're the challenger. Like, it's literally, you know, you have to finish or you're losing the fight. And the stakes are so high anyways. You're a main event or a co-main event. You're fighting for five rounds. Like, you've worked really hard to get to that point. I think it should, in that environment, be open for everyone. That's where I'd make the argument for open scoring. Start it with five-round fights and see where you go from there. If you're not going to experiment with it in Dana White's Contender Series or The Ultimate Fighter, which I thought would be great environments to experiment with rules. But I think five-round fights where the stakes are the highest and you have five rounds to look at, not three, that would be a cool place.
Well, they're doing it in Invicta, and nobody's stalling in Invicta, right? Like, are they doing it anywhere else, or I think it's just Invicta?
No, Invicta, they're in Missouri, right? That's or yes. Kansas. I always get those states
Kansas
are next
City,
to each
yeah.
Kansas City, Missouri, and that's where I know open scoring is allowed by their sanction. I don't think even here in Nevada, like the Athletic Commission has open scoring approved. Might be a Mark Ratner question,
mm-hmm.
I just think like they have it there because I know it's a state that's approved it. What'd you make of this past weekend Volkanovski's performance? I think he put a complete close to the book on the trilogy, and now he's thinking about going up to 155, which obviously puts an interesting monkey wrench in the situation. Monkey King, monkey wrench. because Charles Oliveira, Beneil Dariush,
Islam.
I mean, this past weekend the fight was amazing. It was like probably the most competitive shutout you've ever seen, because it wasn't like Max was getting whooped any round. It's just he was getting edged out every single round consistently.
Yeah,
it was an amazing performance, but it's just I have a hard time. But and I believe Volk is pound for pound number one, but even at his weight class for his frame, he's very short. So even if he has like a reach advantage, when you're 5'5" and you're punching up, you don't have a reach advantage anymore. And I feel like he's never really faced any strong grapplers except for Mendez, and Mendez got him down and held his back for the majority of a round. And I feel like against Makhachev and Oliveira, and even Dariush, I think he might just get like blanketed. But then also, Volk has fought at 170, and he's a very, and I've trained with him, amazing athlete. If anyone could do it, I think it could be him. Like all these other champions who kind of flirt with the idea of being double champ, I don't think it's realistic for anybody but for Volk. So
you trained with him at Syndicate?
Yeah, he visited once, I think, either for his debut or the fight after his debut. And I remember because I heard his accent, I'm like, this guy can't wrestle. He's not going to be able to wrestle or grapple with me. And I was wrong. I was very wrong. He wrestled the crap out of me. I was young, so I'm going to use that as my excuse. I was pretty young, but yeah, he's an amazing athlete, amazing fighter.
You have him as your number one pound for pound over Usman and most Israel.
Definitely. Yeah, most definitely. I feel like if I was like to curve the grading, you know, 55, 35, 45, get the highest amount of points just right off the bat. And the farther you get away from that, the less credit you get from me, at least, you know. And I feel like Kamaru, he's fought almost all like small 55ers who came up to 170 for his like title fights. And I love Jorge Masvidal, but he literally got a title shot off of two really big wins, and he gets his entire career up to that point was kind of middling in terms of like win-loss ratio. So he beat Jorge twice, which is still good, but that wasn't the best person in the division. No one ever argued that Jorge was the number two person at that time. He beat Covington, who was a legitimate win, but also, you know, small guy. He fought Gilbert Burns, small guy. So I feel like Kamaru hasn't really fought anyone his size, not in the tail end of his career, while during his title reign. And I feel like Volk has literally killed everyone that Max hasn't already killed yet, you know? So, like, Volk also has the advantage of Max being able to play, like, goalie for him. Like, you have to make it past Max. I've already lost to Max to get the title shot for Volk. So, yeah, I think Volk's pound for pound number one.
Who's your pound for pound number one?
Gosh. It's always interesting to me to hear the announcer say, oh, they're the hottest, or pound for pound. And I'm like, all right, well, you're forgetting about all these people in the past. I feel like all champions have like a really good run and then they kind of fall off. Like Anderson Silva, he defended his belt forever. Ronda Rousey, like Joanna Jędrzejczyk, you know. Right now, I think Volkanovski is probably the current era pound for pound, maybe. But, you know, the people I just mentioned, I also have a very high opinion of.
For sure. It's always changing, too.
Because Fedor?
Like, yeah.
Fyodor?
And Demetrius Johnson?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, if you're a top three, like, you're talking about GOAT status.
Oh, his favorite question, the MMA Mount Rushmore.
Yeah. Well, this question was just about current, yeah, the number current. One pound. Yeah.
Oh, okay, okay.
But current. We could transition to that if you want to.
Okay, well, current, that's cool. Then I would say, yeah, probably.
Volkanovski too. Yeah. And it's a good point because Max really is a measuring stick for everybody at that 145 weight division. Even the performance that he just had against the guy who's fighting Brian Ortega, the week
Yair
before your card.
Yair Rodriguez.
Killer. Killer. And then they both faced Aldo and beat him twice, right? Both Max and Volkanovski.
Yeah, Volk only beat him the one time.
Oh, the one time. Yeah. Okay, it was Max twice. But even just the Brian Ortegas that we just mentioned too. And right now, the featherweight division, who is the clear number one? You can make a number one person for Volk to fight. You can make a case for Josh Emmett, who just came off that 5-round victory over Calvin Kattar, which was a really razor-thin close fight, if you ask me. And then the fight that we're going to see over in New York, we're going to see the winner of Brian Ortega and Yair Rodriguez. If Brian Ortega wins, are people going to be rushing to the door to see Brian Ortega rematch Volkanovski right away? But then Yair Rodriguez wins. Well, he's coming off one win because his last fight, he lost to Max Holloway. You don't have a real big case at 145 for a clear title contender.
Well, I think the era of immediate rematches has really ruined the sport from a matchmaking perspective. Like, I understand, like, oh, it's exciting and it's good business-wise in the short term, but it really ruins a long-term, like, layout of, like, the ranking system. Like, at 125, you had two back-to-back rematches, and now it's kind of like a no-man's zone, and perhaps the champion's thinking about moving up. So now, like, it feels like the storyline's not been concluded, and I feel like immediate rematches, they kind of rush things too much, and it causes a lot of other fighters to really have to defend their spot. But then if you're like the number one contender, you can fight once every 18 months and you're still the number one contender. You know, I feel like at 145, Max is still the clear number one contender, but they're not going to do a rematch. It makes no business sense. And it's confusing, but I think immediate rematches have really ruined a lot of the divisions.
Yeah, and I think a lot of the immediate rematches are pressured by the rankings, and the rankings can be pretty inconsistent too, because there could be guys that are ranked in divisions that haven't been active for years. You know, Conor McGregor comes to mind too. I think he still got the number 12 next to his name, and when was the last time he won it at 155-pound weight division fight? Was it Eddie Alvarez in 2017. Ooh. Like, that was the last time he won at 155. So it's just, and then there's just people that haven't been active. Like, I love Chris Weidman, but we are not going to see him for a long time. And he still has a number next to his name in the middleweight division. That prevents people, the younger guys, getting booked to fight people because people don't want to lose their position in line. And I just think it's been a detriment to kind of moving things along in specific weight divisions in the sport, especially as of late.
Can we go back to the important question, your favorite one?
Which one?
The Mount Rushmore.
Oh, yeah, Mount Rushmore.
And because you just asked Joanna, too, the other
day. It's so funny. I started asking that question just randomly. I think it was to John Jones. It was like I wanted to ask something different that I hadn't heard before, and this was a few years ago, 2018 or 19. And I was just like, okay, this is the appropriate person to ask. Who's your Mount Rushmore of MMA fighters? You can include yourself. So there's four of total, and he included himself and named three others, and I thought that was appropriate. And then as time has progressed, I feel like I've asked that question to fighters of significance, like someone like a Demetrius Johnson, a Joanna Jędrzejczyk, like what their Mount Rushmore would be. So she's bringing that up. We're asking you guys, what's your Mount Rushmore of MMA? Current, past, whatever. And that can mean anything. Most impactful, mix it with the best. Who's your Mount Rushmore?
Fedor, Joanna, Anderson Silva, I guess Ronda Rousey.
There's no wrong answers because they're all great. They're all pioneers.
I'm sure there's more that I can think of.
Let me tell you why you're wrong. But in terms of impact, like, I think that's a great round.
That's great.
Rushmore, like, in terms of impact, like, I'm not going to do mine in terms of impact because I'm going to overthink it too much. Because, like, what about, there's always some guy in the comment section, what about Hoyce Gracie?
Exactly.
Like, oh, snap.
I mean, the UFC first tournaments were kind of rigged for him to win, but whatever, like, we can include him. Or Kazuchika Sakuraba. There's so many people that have been so influential.
Sakuraba. Yeah.
And, like, changing the game. Like, influencing the meta of the sport immensely. So, impact's super hard for me because I think I overthink it. But in terms of, like, resume status.
Yeah.
I think, in no particular order, GSP, Demetrius Johnson, Anderson, and then John Jones plays base. I'm also willing to trade an Anderson for Fedor.
Interesting. Yeah. You included two females. He included none.
No, I'm just there was one actually I would switch out one of my females for, but I forgot. What did you just say?
Fedor, John Jones, Demetrius Johnson, GSP?
GSP. Yeah.
Well, for the women's MMA Mount Rushmore, because you did that on
I did like a separate one for female. I just thought,
yeah,
it had some backlash to it, and it's hard to contextualize it. But the four I put were Amanda Nunes, Valentina, Ronda Rousey, and Joanna.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Those are your four. People gave me a
Jordan's
lot of,
giving you a
people
look.
Gave me backlash because I didn't have
Chris Cyborg,
Holly Holm, and then the other one was Gina Carano.
It's really too hard to make only four. Like
Jordan's face.
I know. It's hard. And then Rose, too. I mean, those are just the people I would include if it was more than four, but there was only four.
Megumi Fujii.
Yeah.
I have to include her. I used to watch when I was younger. Had like a more than a decade-long winning streak, Megumi Fujii. I almost said Honda Rousey. I hang out with a Brazilian people. Ronda Rousey, Chris Cyborg, and then Joanna. I'm going to butcher her name. Joanna. I just feel like Rose's, in particular Rose's legacy, gets really affected by the Carla Esparza losses.
Yeah.
And I feel like Carla Esparza's losses are only, Carla Esparza's only discredited because she lost to Joanna so convincingly. But me, Megumi, Ronda. And then another people I said. Chris
How'd you Cyborg. Leave Amanda Nunes off? The greatest female fighter of all time?
I would put Holly Holm above Amanda Nunes in terms of like impact on the sport. Mm. But I'm a Holly Holm fanboy. And it took a lot of energy for me not to put her on the MMA Mount Rushmore because she's been number one and then solid number two for a decade.
Yeah.
Like Holly Holm's only lost to champions. And she's only lost to. You know, and she's lost under pretty, sketch circumstances like Duran, I mean, like Rob versus that one. Holly Holm would be the first you know, double champ in women's MMA history. And then I think Amanda lost to Valentina for the one of them. I think Valentina lost to the second one. So for me, it's, yeah, that's my four. That's controversial, but that's my four. I'm sticking to it.
No, it's a good list.
How do you feel about his list, Roxy?
I'm going to take the fifth on the
series. Okay. Mount Rushmore questions. Oh, and by the way, I love both of your shirts, The Happy Warrior and Stephen King Rules.
You can tell he hates books.
Yeah, you were talking to us about a lot of books the other day. Yeah,
I'm reading a lot this year. The goal is to get to 100. I'm at 43. I'm about to finish 44 today, hopefully.
I'm going to finish a book today, too, but it's a much smaller book. It was just given to me this week by Mark Ratner, his book, Ringside.
Nice.
A little memoir of all of his stories and stuff. I can't wait to get to the part where he talks about when Mike Tyson bit off Evander Holyfield's ear, because he was all of that. Yeah.
Wow.
He was headbutting him. He deserved it. I feel for him.
Tell us how you really feel, Jordan.
I mean, I'm going to say if someone headbutt me, I might have bit him once. The second bite was completely unwarranted, but the first little nibble, I could overlook that.
That's why I was really excited to see those two potentially fight again. And then I think it was during the time when Mike Tyson was matched up against Roy Jones Jr. They were talking with Evander Holyfield, and then Evander Holyfield ended up stepping in the ring, which he should never have done with Vitor Belfort, and that was ugly. But, yeah, we almost could have seen a second match between Evander and Mike Tyson a couple of years ago.
I'm glad it didn't happen. I think you should let the old dogs ride off into the sunset, you know, especially Evander. Like, he's shown a lot of, like, signs of CTE and brain damage, and he did not have, like, a health-friendly style, so I hated to see him out there. Mike Tyson, you know, took relatively little damage throughout his career, so it's a little different. He still moves well. I feel like a lot of fighters, they shouldn't be able to fight in their advanced 40s and in their 50s. I think it's dangerous, and I think it's just a money grab. And I don't think it's in the best interest of competitors.
Well, it's up to the athletic commissions to not sanction those fights.
Mm-hmm.
Well, guys, we really appreciate you coming on the Schmo Zone. What kind of final message would you like to leave for everybody? Roxy?
Gosh. I'm not sure what to say. Thanks for having me, and be unique always.
Yeah. I'm just happy to be on a podcast with Roxy. That's kind of cool. It's super, like, cathartic, and it's, yeah. I'm surprised. I didn't think this would ever happen, you know? I see a lot of podcasts where you see, like, two people who have, like, a history together, and I'm like, that's really cool. I'm not sure there's really anybody in my fight career that kind of, like, fits that position for me. I think Roxy fits that position for me. She's been there since the beginning of my career, and I watched her beforehand, and I'm a fan of her during her fight career. I'm a fan of her in her post-fight career, and I think it's fitting. I don't know. I'm happy about this.
Then on that note, do you have a favorite or most memorable story with Roxy?
Oh, gosh. Favorite or most memorable? There's a lot of funny Roxyisms that's happened at the gym. There's always the Syndic story. I like that story a lot. That's a fun story. About the sex toy in the background of one of her interviews. That's a fun story.
Wait, what?
Remember the Syndic?
Yeah, I remember that, but not with me.
It was you.
Was it?
Maybe she wasn't aware of that video. Never mind. There's one video of that. But,
breaking news.
I don't know. I think Roxy's career has been super epic. Like, for me, my favorite Roxy story is when I was like I was at Buffalo Wild Wings and she was fighting Macy Barber, and it also happened the same place where you fought
Shevchenko,
and I was watching. Oh, she's a big underdog. I'm like, oh no. I'm like, I bet you Roxy wins this. It's in Russia. I don't care if it's in Russia. She's still gonna win this. Or like when she fought Macy Barber, like I knew. 100%, no doubt in my mind. I'm like, no, there's no way she loses that fight. And I was like, thinking about it like in a super, like, almost like a spiritual sense. I'm like, no, that's not the way this story's supposed to go. You know, Roxy's supposed to win this fight. And then it did happen. I don't know. There's like, she's the easiest fighter to root for, yeah. At least for me, because, like, how can you root against her? She's being herself. for her entire career, doesn't sell out when a lot of these other fighters sell out, doesn't miss weight, doesn't cheat, no scandals. It's like, I can't pick a story. Her entire career and her life has been a consistent story, consistent theme, and it's hard to kind of pick it apart.
Thanks, Jordan.
That's a great note to end on.
Yeah. Well, we appreciate having you guys on. And episode 106 of the Schmozone podcast, we are out.
Hang on a second. Can I say something else?
Of course.
I just wanted to add that it's so cool for me to see you in the UFC now. You know, because I watched you in Tough Enough, the amateur show, and now, I'm like, man, that guy's going to for sure be in the UFC someday. And I love seeing you improve, and, your striking is so amazing now. Good work. I can tell you've been working on it, and just your crazy skills and your talent, it's so cool. I knew you'd be in the UFC, and I'm really happy and thrilled to see you now, and I can't wait to continue following your career.
Thanks, Roxy.